The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the North Carolina Reading Service, our summer newsletter. From the Blind Post, changes in their newsletter. From the Kansas City Star, the world's fastest blind runner. That's for this summer's Paralympics. From Forbes magazine, why you should stop using a certain iPhone Wi-Fi setting. And Apple issues a swift fix. From the Maryland School for the Blind, a Zoom registration for visually impaired student support webinar coming up in August. From Cool Blind Tech, articles on Alexa's new voice, new wardrobe management app from Carleton University, and a collision avoidance camera. So let's get started. From North Carolina Reading Service. When it rains, look for rainbows. When it's dark, look for stars. Unknown attribution. NCRS will be closed on Monday, September 6, 2021 for Labor Day. We hope everyone has a safe and happy holiday. Round up your spare change to benefit NCRS. Looking for a new way to donate your spare change while supporting a good cause? NCRS has an opportunity for you to donate your spare change by rounding up when you use your credit or debit card at any place you shop. It's simple and easy to register and connect your credit and or debit card to NCRS. Once your card is registered for NCRS, any purchases you make will automatically round up to the next dollar as change for NCRS. The change accumulates through the month and will automatically go directly to NCRS. Please note there is a minimum of $10 roundup donation per month, and you can also set a monthly maximum roundup donation. For more information and to register and connect your card, please click at the hot link and click the Roundups tab. Please contact Janet at 919-832-5138 or email Janet at ncreadingservice.org with any questions. Thank you in advance for supporting NCRS. Save the date, New Visions Gala 2022. NCRS is pleased to announce the date for our annual New Visions Gala. Mark your calendar for Friday, April 29th, 2022. Our first gala committee meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, September 14th. If you are interested in joining our gala committee, please contact Janet at janet@ncreadingservice.org or Missy at missy@ncreadingservice.org. Mark your calendar for our fall Vision Aware webinar. Please join NCRS on October 15th, 2021 from 10 to 11 a.m. for our fall Vision Aware webinar. This free webinar is hosted by NCRS and features Omar Mohiuddin, M-O-H-I-U-D-D-I-N, Master of Science, OTR/L, MPH, who works at the Duke Eye Center with vision rehabilitation and performance seeing clients with age-related and acute onset vision impairments. More information on registering for this free webinar coming soon. Tech tips and reminders. Please make sure we are utilizing all best practices when reading. There have been some complaints about our volunteers expressing their opinions and editorializing while on the air. Due to FCC regulations, we are only allowed to read exactly what is printed. Although it might still be light outside when you leave after your afternoon or weekend shift, please remember to continue leaving the outside light on if you are the last person at NCRS. Our newspaper carriers deliver the papers around 3 a.m., and they have difficulty seeing our address when the lights are off. Please note, we have updated TV listings that we read. The updated version is both in the cutting room and in the live studio. NCRS would like to thank the Forest at Duke, Town of Cary, and the Triangle Community Foundation for their generous donations in support of the North Carolina Reading Service. NCRS Board of Directors, Greg Suggs, President, Iris Green, Vice President, Sharon Benton, Secretary, Jeffrey Johnson, Treasurer, Joe Austin, Jim Cronin, Marcy Gordon, Brandon Hare, Craig Hayward, Bryce Smith, Cynthia Spate, Jennifer Walker, Past President George Douglas, Co-Founders Ben Eason, deceased, Dr. Ed Funkhauser. Contact NCRS staff, May Tran, Executive Director, may@ncreadingservice.org. Missy Hollander, Production Volunteer Manager, missy@ncreadingservice.org. Janet Schanzenbach, Director of Development and Community Relations, janet@ncreadingservice.org. From the Blind Post, Lori Motis at the Blind Post. New changes, Blind Post News August Monthly Reminder. New changes coming to the Blind Post News. Most of you received my survey, and I have gotten several responses so far. Due to some of them, I have decided to make just a few changes. First off, I will be emailing the news a few days earlier than the 12th of the month. Therefore, the August news will be emailed on or before the 9th of each month. And I need all submissions emailed to me, foodlady@theblindpost.com, or by replying to this message on or before August 5th. Second, I will be changing the word counts and cost to your advantage. Longer word counts and better pricing. See below. Also, I will no longer be doing any extra notices between the monthly news. I will be working on the format of the website and getting previous articles uploaded with easier navigation to read just what you want to read. You can continue to send me your survey responses, and you do not need to answer every single question. Just send me your answers and comments to them. Any response is a good one for me. New word counts and price changes. All current subscribers to date, 1,159. You can post one ad, now 75 words or less, for free each month. The second 75-word notice is $7. Notices that are for the wanted, looking for, or to give away section are free up to 75 words as well. Paying notices that are over 75 to 150 words are $11. 151 to 300 words are $18, and 301 to 500 words are $24. Sponsoring the Blind Post. If you would like to sponsor the Blind Post News or any future issues, please contact me. The sponsorship cost is now only $35 for each issue and can be up to 800 words. The sponsorship notices will have a blurb at the beginning of the news and then the full notice somewhere in the middle with another part at the end of each emailed news and will still be posted to the homepage of the website. The monthly news and all notices stay up on the website for 30 days. Email me at foodlady@theblindpost.com. And I will let you know that I have received your submissions. You can either attach your notice as a Word or text document or put it in the body of the email. For payments and donations, please use foodlady@theblindpost.com with PayPal. I also accept personal checks. Please email me for my address. What can you post to the Blind Post? If you are blind or visually impaired, you can submit all types of notices from new or used items, music artists, authors, and more, services or training, business or job listings, items you are looking for trade or to give away, and announcements that you think other readers would be interested in. Notices and announcements pertaining to the blind and low vision community from all individuals, schools, and organizations are also welcome. If you are blind or visually impaired and own a business, you can submit notices for that too, even if it does not necessarily pertain to the blind and low vision community. If you have any questions about your submission, email me and I will let you know if it is suitable for the Blind Post News. The editor reserves the right to decide if an announcement or notice of any kind is suitable for the Blind Post. All submissions posted are not necessarily the beliefs or opinions of the editor or the Blind Post News. Make sure your contact information is correct for each post you submit. Email all notices to foodlady@theblindpost.com. Subscriptions to the Blind Post. You can subscribe to the Blind Post by sending email to theblindpostplussubscribe@groups.io. To unsubscribe, email theblindpostplussunsubscribe@groups.io. Lori, a.k.a. Food Lady, Lori Motis, L-O-R-I-M-O-T-I-S, publisher and editor of the Blind Post Classified News, a great place to share and sell. foodlady@theblindpost.com. https://www.theblindpost.com/. From the Kansas City Star, kansascity.com, how a Kansas Cityan overcame fear, depression, and became the world's fastest blind runner, by Vahe Gregorian, V-A-H-E-G-R-E-G-O-R-I-A-N. Before he became the world's fastest blind runner and a motivational speaker and seminary student and learned four instruments and played in a jazz band, David Brown had to confront the paralyzing fear and agony delivered by a rare condition, Kawasaki disease, that spurred a rarer yet result of glaucoma. Despite so many trips to Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City for treatment and surgeries that a nurse gave him what he calls the catchy nickname of Downtown David Brown, he lost his left eye at age 3 and his overall vision by age 13. And despite the loving foundation he had in his mother and grandmother and support from nurses and doctors at Children's Mercy and at the Sabatis Eye Center and teachers at the Kansas City Children's Center for the Visually Impaired, CCVI, he at times felt alone and petrified. While he tried to cling to hope his vision might return, the pressure in his remaining eye became so high that he became afraid to go outside because of his intense light sensitivity. As bright as it was terrifying me, he said in a phone interview from California, where the 100-meter world record holder among blind sprinters, 10.92 seconds, is training for the Tokyo Paralympics in August as he seeks to repeat his gold medal performance from Rio in the T11 classification for the most extremely visually impaired. And, of course, I was afraid of the dark because I couldn't see what was in the dark, he said. It really messed up my mind. Even what proved to be a vital step forward began with a piercing twist for the now 28-year-old. At age 11, he set out for Missouri School for the Blind in St. Louis, where his mother Francine and sister Brianna moved with him. But a variety of issues came with that for his family, including financial troubles and what he preferred to simply call this problem and that problem. And he could only think, I'm the cause of all this. This is my fault. So at 13, he was engulfed in depression and contemplating suicide. Having been raised a Christian, he said, his faith in the grace of God helped to sustain him. But he also was saved by something more worldly, the outlet of sports in general and ultimately track in particular. Wrestling and goalball and running all enabled him to vent and move toward what would become to matter the most, embracing his blindness, which changed his perceptions and perspectives in many ways. So he prayed and cried and let out his rage and frustration in those controlled settings and found escape in those things he loved, including running. He was 5 or 6 years old back in Kansas City when he first had the inkling he was fast, after a race associated with the CCVI trolley run in which he finished second. But only because I slipped on mud, he said, laughing. At the Missouri School for the Blind, he learned to run holding a guide wire, well described by Runner's World as something like a clothesline at hip height, and began to understand more about himself in the process as he was emerging from his despondency. He learned more about his mobility. His mother, Francine Brown, who lives back in Kansas City now, but could not immediately be reached, told Runner's World. He adapted really well. He was a good kid. I told him at home there's no sitting down, no pouting. I didn't move furniture. He had to learn to get around. He learned his independence, which was great. He was a strong child. Soon came another pivot point. As he advanced in track, he wrote a compelling essay about how sports had impacted his life. It focused in part on how the struggle in sports parallels the struggles of life and how you can't give up and have to adapt to circumstances and push through the pain. The essay, incidentally, was submitted for a contest to attend the 2008 Paralympic Games in Beijing. It won, and he said the rest was history after his experience sitting near the top of the Beijing National Stadium, better known as the Bird's Nest. While he could see only spots and dots by then, a friend described the atmosphere and he felt the vibe. He knew he would dedicate himself to making the 2012 Paralympics in London, where he indeed reached the semifinals of the 100 and 200, and to wherever else this might go. After steady improvement led him to anchoring a team at the Penn Relays, he was invited to train at Paralympic camps, including at the Chula Vista Elite Athlete Training Center, where he later was invited to live and train during a career that has included the pleasure of meeting Morris Green, another area native once known as the world's fastest man. That was when he began to train in the T11 category, in which athletes are required to wear gauze and a blindfold over their eyes and run in tandem with a guide. As for any other competitors, whatever scant remaining vision he had left now was altogether neutralized for competition, making for another tier of embracing his blindness. Once again, it wasn't a simple or easy adjustment, even as Brown began to experience heightened senses of what was around him, such as hearing where his competitors are in some races. So even as he was still learning his own parameters and finding his form after years spent holding the wire with his left hand and pumping only with his right, now he had to find a way to maximize that by trusting a guide he didn't know to whom he'd attach himself with a fabric tether. What he jokingly called like a three-legged race would be foreign enough for a sighted person to do, he said, but imagine how it might feel to him to both cut loose and be in sync. It was hard enough to walk straight, let alone run straight, hard enough to conceive technique to critique without seeing tape of himself. But his coach, Joaquim Cruz, the Brazilian who won a gold medal in the 800 at the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics, made a momentous decision to pair Brown with veteran guide Jerome Avery. Like anything else worth doing, it wasn't instant magic between Brown and Avery, who had competed in the 2000 and 2004 USA Track and Field Olympic trials before becoming a renowned guide runner for several athletes. But through endless workouts and time spent together, they cultivated a certain rhythm and chemistry that led to Brown in 2014 becoming the first completely blind athlete to break the 11-second barrier in the 100. That very weekend, he also broke the same category of record in the 200 with a time of 22.41. Brown also ran with Avery, his partner of 7 years, at the Rio Paralympics. But an injury to Avery has made for a fresh challenge, as Brown tries to repeat as Paralympic champion. For the last few months, Brown has been working with 20-year-old Maury Stewart, who is less than half of Avery's age, 42, several inches shorter than the equally 5'9 Brown, and Avery, and had little previous experience as a guide. That required an entirely new feeling out process and navigating some bumps, including into each other, coming out of the blocks in one race. But over time, they've gelled more as they've learned each other better and developed their own way of communicating. That typically includes Stewart helping align Brown and the blocks just right, he said, and calling out when to drive, 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 and accelerate, reaching the halfway point, the 20-meter mark, and finally, five and lean. As for the syncing up, Stewart said, the height difference matters little. He has more stride length, I have more stride frequency, he said, so it matches up. Just like how almost everything else has become an alignment for Brown, who recently became engaged to Rebecca Hill, a former USA Archery Achievement Awards winner. Their future plans include forming their own fitness business while he seeks to do ministry work. He also figures he'll be shooting for the 2024 Paralympics in track, and then maybe we'll see about joining the blind soccer team for the 2028 Los Angeles Games. Everything is possible, he figures now, through his faith and sports, and maybe through some fusion of both if that is the essence of how he feels so free to run with a guide. I've got to trust my guide with my ability to get down the track, he said, and off the track as well as on the track, I've got to trust God with my ability to get through life, a life he appreciates all the more for the journey. It was worth going through to be where I am now, he said later, adding, we can all look back and see it was all for a purpose. David Brown races with a guide during an event leading up to the past Paralympic Games held in 2016 in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The Kansas City native is about to compete in the Paralympics again, this time in Tokyo. That was the caption to an AP file photo. Vahe Gregorian has been a sports columnist for the Kansas City Star since 2013, after 25 years at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He has covered a wide spectrum of sports, including 10 Olympics. Vahe was an English major at the University of Pennsylvania and earned his master's degree at Mizzou. The first of two articles from Forbes.com, Why You Should Stop Using This Dangerous Wi-Fi Setting on Your iPhone, by Zach Doffman. So Apple has fixed its dangerous and embarrassing Wi-Fi issue. iOS 14.7 has added improved checks, Apple says, to stop its devices joining a malicious Wi-Fi network that may result in a denial of service or arbitrary code execution. But be warned, iOS 14.7 doesn't make you safe from Wi-Fi attacks. Far from it. Apple's devices are generally safer and more secure than the alternatives, generally. But that doesn't mean your iPhone, iPad, and Mac are secure. We've seen plenty of iPhone vulnerabilities patched in recent months with emergency fixes, and just this week we saw a stark warning about very malicious malware now attacking Macs. Apple's recent Wi-Fi security issue was a crafted SSID bug where the combination of characters can trick the iPhone into processing the SSID as code, locking up its Wi-Fi function as a result. There's a debate as to whether this could be used to attack the device itself, but either way, it's a specific vulnerability Apple has fixed in iOS 14.7. We've seen similar issues before with so-called text bombs, where crafted text strings can overwhelm an Apple device, triggering unexpected behaviors. Those attacks usually require a simple reset. Albeit, we have seen examples where the text can never be processed in your chat history, and that means deleting and reinstalling the messaging app. Pre the fix, the latest Wi-Fi issue also required a reset. The risk from all these bugs is that once you force a device into an unusual state, you can often follow up with another exploit to attack the device. For example, planting seemingly benign code that then downloads and installs nastier malware. While the latest flaw was technical, you were only at risk if you left your Wi-Fi settings open. Absent that, you would need to manually choose a Wi-Fi network with an odd name. You may have assumed that you would be unlikely to fall for such an attack, but many of you will still have your Wi-Fi settings dangerously open. And while this particular flaw aimed to trick your phone, most Wi-Fi attacks simply aim to trick you. Connectivity attacks on mobile devices can have multiple purposes. The simplest is clearly just to intercept your traffic. That doesn't help where that traffic is encrypted, but it can be compromising with plain text and web queries. Sometimes a security agent might not need the traffic, just a device identifier and a known location. Which protesters turned up at this location on this date? Or where was this lawyer at this time? As an extension of this, we have seen examples where knocking individuals off comms at specific times is valuable to an adversary. If I can crash a protest group's WhatsApp accounts, I can frustrate their planning. Or if I can create a black spot while making it seem as though devices are connected, I can keep those targets dark. Other focus attacks on planting malware on the device once it has joined, perhaps engaging in some form of UI with the device as part of the network login process that actually attacks the device itself with no filtering in place. But where these risks involve Wi-Fi connectivity, it starts with one stupidly simple vulnerability that's right there on your iPhone, and one piece of sage advice that you must not ignore. Change the setting and follow the advice, and you won't have to worry about being compromised in this way. Let's start with the advice. Don't use public Wi-Fi hotspots. And if you really have to, make sure you use a reputable VPN. It's still as simple as that. Sometimes a hotspot might be a malicious network with a generic name, public free Wi-Fi, or similar. But bad actors can also mimic popular or specific SSIDs, the names of the hotel or restaurant or airport you're in, for example. Criminals can conduct an evil twin attack by creating their own malicious network with a similar name, the FBI warns. You may then mistakenly connect to the criminal's network instead. You shouldn't join public Wi-Fi networks, even manually, but you should absolutely categorically stop your phone auto-joining such networks without you even realizing, which it is very likely set up by default to do at this moment. I'd avoid auto-joining any public network, security researcher Sean Wright has warned. Since they are public and open, it makes spoofing them all too easy. Your iPhone sends out probes for hotspots it is looking to connect to, so an attacker can stand up hotspots with those SSIDs. It takes nothing more than a cell phone. I was in a hotel lobby, I set up my free hotspot, and had 5 devices connect in minutes. Bad actors can mimic the exact name of a popular hotspot, tricking you into manually connecting even where auto-joining is disabled. Worse, they can mimic popular SSIDs, hoping you've used those networks before and your iPhone is set to join when it sees them. I once saw a Starbucks and a Subway Wi-Fi access point flying from Newark to Vegas at 35,000 feet, Cyjax CISO Ian Thornton Trump told me. The easiest option is to stick to cellular when you're out and about, when you're away from home or work or other known friendly locations. While it's perfectly possible to spoof a cell network, that gets into the realm of specialist, expensive interception. Protecting yourself is easy, though, and if you change these settings, then Wi-Fi issues, such as the most recent iPhone warning, can't compromise you. In your iPhone's settings, click on Wi-Fi and then make sure that Ask to Join Networks and Auto Join Hotspots are both set to Ask/Ask to Join. If you don't have multiple networks stored by your device beyond home and work, you can set Ask to Join Networks to off or notify to avoid having to click when you are at home or work. But then you must click the blue circled eye next to any other networks you connect to and disable auto join. You shouldn't auto join your local coffee shop's Wi-Fi, however convenient that might be. As for this latest bug and resultant fix, Thornton Trump has a broader warning. My contention is that this is not a security problem, he tells me. I believe it's legacy code from 5, 10, or 15 years ago, which just can't withstand the current generation of reverse engineering and malicious hacking. Vendors seem to be in a constant battle to secure, and the tempo of that battle has increased considerably. Although this bug has been fixed, agrees ESET's Jake Moore, like all exploits, the very nature of them mean they remain unknown until they are located, and therefore exercising caution to all connectivity must be carried out. Public Wi-Fi is often considered safe with the use of a VPN, but this may not always protect you against rogue Wi-Fi, so it is important to check first or stick with 4G, 5G if in doubt. Protecting yourself from almost all Wi-Fi compromises is as easy as the steps above, until such time as hotspot verification and anti-spoofing becomes universal. The trade-off between security and convenience means you need to stay cautious. I'm running low on time, so I will only read the second Forbes article if I can completely finish that, and put off the Maryland School for the Blind Zoom registration and the Cool Blind Tech articles for next week. From Forbes.com, Apple iOS 14.7.1. Apple issues Swift update to fix urgent iPhone issue by David Phelan, PHELAN. iOS 14.7.1 fixes an issue where iPhone models with Touch ID cannot unlock a paired Apple Watch using the Unlock with iPhone feature. This update also provides important security updates and is recommended for all users. For information on the security content of Apple software updates, please visit https://support.apple.com/KB/HT20122. Make Forbes your destination for all things iOS. Another iOS update so soon? That's because the last one, iOS 14.7, and itself an unprecedented update, managed to break something, and this update is along to fix it. Read on for full details of this update and how to get it, followed by previous releases. This update is for compatible iPhones with iPad iOS 14.7.1, which is simultaneously released for compatible iPads. Compatibility for the phones goes back to the iPhone 6S, including iPhone SE, both first and current editions, plus the 7th generation iPod Touch. For iPads, if you have any iPad Pro, iPad Air 2, or more recent, iPad Mini 4 or newer, and iPad from 5th generation onwards, then you're good to go. Updating is straightforward, but you'll know this by now. Go to the Settings app on the iPhone or iPad and choose General, then Software Update. Then it's Download and finally Install. This is a small update, 124 megabits on my iPhone 12 Pro Max, so it won't take long to install. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service,